Joel, thank you. If you have been blessed, would you just let him know that? We've known each other 24 hours, and my soul has been blessed. He does have CDs over here. I brought one up with me. They're $1,000 a piece. He has a 14-year-old son. Just saying. You know, last night I shared a little bit of with you about UM Lakers, and I really, today I trust you've had a chance just to relax, to have fun around the lake. I hope your soul has been refreshed by the things that have happened to you in the last day and a half. I was thinking last night, UM Lakers, and reflected a lot for me, so much of my life, a past life, entailed basketball. And I shared a little bit of playing in the Lakers summer league with Laker players and Clipper players back in the day. And I've thought more about that over the last 24 hours because I don't think about it very often. It's a past life. But I often remembered, I reflect back to my days playing, and I always remember the moments before the big game. We'd be sitting around the locker room. And coach would be telling us, okay, we're going to play man-to-man defense. After made free throws, we'd full court press. Bowl, you're guarding number 52. He's their post player. And if you don't front him, he's going to score on us and we're going to lose and it'll be your fault. And it's that's kind of what locker room was. And there was pacing back and forth amongst us and the team as we were thinking, how's the game going to unfold? What's God going to do? I went to a Christian college, so we got to talk in those terms when we'd prepare for a game. And we'd be ready to go. And I remember in the course of playing, I got to know Rick Fox, who played for the Lakers for a number of years. He and I are pretty good friends. And I was sitting one time, I was visiting Rick. We were in California. And I said, hey, Rick, can I come to practice? It was when Kobe and Shaq were still on the Lakers. And so I said, sure, man, come on. You can sit down and watch practice. So I got to sit and watch a Lakers practice. And it was fun to watch Phil Jackson limp around the court trying to instruct these guys that were making hundreds of millions of dollars in their careers. And I remember after practice, Rick and I were talking, we went out to eat, and I said, Rick, tell me, what's it like in the locker room before a big game at the NBA level? Because I knew what it was like at the collegiate level. And he said, John, with Phil Jackson as the coach, he walks around with a tambourine, and he drives away the evil spirits. I'm like, what? And if you know anything about Phil's coaching, he believes in that kind of stuff pretty deeply. They call him the Zen master. I mean, he really is into that pretty seriously. But he'd walk around with a tambourine, and he would come to your locker, and he'd come to Shaq's locker, and to Kobe's locker, and to my locker. And I was like, that's what's weird. But that's kind of what being in the locker room before the big game's like. And I got to thinking about this weekend, what do we want it to be for you guys? And really, I got to thinking, you know what? I want it to be a locker room experience where you prepare for what God has for you next week. Whatever that's going to be. We don't know what that's going to be for you guys. When you leave the hill, whatever God's going to do in your life, I want you to have a time that your soul's been refreshed. And so tonight, we're going to have just a locker room chat as we prepare and think about what's happening in the future of UM Lake. And I've had the privilege in the first 11 months to be here. Seldom do you have this privilege in life, at least I haven't, where the person whose place you take in an organization remains at the organization. And you're hired to take his job. It's an interesting dynamic. And I've had that privilege for 11 months. Mike Drake, who has been a fixture at UM Lake for 28 years, which just blows my mind. I've never been any place for 28 years, has faithfully served, and most of you know him far better than I do. But there's some things I don't think you know about Mike. And so tonight I thought it would be fun if Mike and I sat on the stools and I get to ask Mike any question that I want to ask him. So I told him, he said, yeah, John, I'm good with that. I can handle whatever you throw at me. So Mike, come on up here, if you would. And Mike, the most first burning question that we all have this evening, I'm going to put my kind of my clock down here. Tell us how you met Glenda. Because she really is your better half.
I first remember, she was a freshman when I was a senior in college. And I remember we went and played the University of Hawaii. I played football in college. And when we returned from that football game over in Hawaii, a lot of the kids from the school came out the airport and greeted the players as we came back in. And I remember spotting her and saying, wow, I wish she was here to see me. You know, but she was just out there just to root on the, well, she did kind of have a favorite guy on the football team, but wasn't me. But anyway, she was a part of that whole group that came out. And after football season, I became the student manager of the dining hall. And she was already working in the dining hall to earn part-time money to help through college. And she ended up being what I, well, what we did call, but it sounds kind of funny now, she was my dessert girl. So.
Are we allowed to say that? We can say that in public here? All right. This has gone a better direction than I thought. Write that down. Dessert girl.
So she took care of the desserts, you know, for one of the meals. And I found myself helping out a lot. And helping her scoop ice cream because maybe it was too hard to scoop or, you know, whatever the need was there. Anyway, we still, so we got acquainted through that work experience there. And then I asked her out and led to this.
Led to this. From dessert to this. Tell us about family, Mike, now that you met and married the dessert girl. Glenda, it's a new nickname. I can see it. Everywhere I go now, they'll never be the same. We're going to go to 16 dinners come January and February. Tell us about your family, kids, grandkids.
Yeah, you bet. It's just a joy in our life. We have two children, a son and a daughter. Matt was the oldest. Marcy was the youngest. Matt is in Fresno, married, adopted two little boys. So I got two little grandsons out of that. They just did this back in 2014. So they were late to the game, giving Glenn and I the grandparent opportunities. But we've trying to capitalize on that now. And then my daughter, Marcy, she married late. Enjoyed being a single girl, worked for the Tiger Woods Foundation, still does actually. And when she married, they waited several years, and then she gave birth the same year that we got the little adopted boys to two little twin girls. And those two little twin girls just became a big sister 12 days ago, and Marcy gave birth to another little girl. So I got three granddaughters, two grandsons, and it's a joy. So grandparents the best, right? I mean, it's just amazing.
Cute little granddaughter. He came over to watch the Astros beat the Dodgers at my house the other night. And, did I say that?
I'm a Dodger fan.
And the first thing, he didn't want to talk about baseball. He's like, did you see my new granddaughter? And so we got to see great pictures of them. One of the things that happens in a locker room when you're getting ready to just sit around these kind of conversations is there's time that you can ask the coaches questions. So you're going to get the privilege in a little bit to ask Mike questions. That you guys want to know if I don't cover them over. So be thinking about some question you want to know from Mike's perspective of being here 28 years. Mike, share with us a little bit, how did God work in your life to move you with the dessert girl to Hume Lake, California?
Well, the dessert girl was responsible for me becoming a believer because she early on in our dating relationship said, well, the man I'm going to end up marrying has to know the Lord and love the Lord like I do. And so I said, well, this guy's smart enough to figure that one out, I hope, anyway. So anyway, I started working my way towards that. Didn't quite get there by the time we got married, but it took a couple years after that. We moved moved to San Jose when we got married. We got married right out of college for me when I graduated. And I went to work for AT&T. And I worked for AT&T for 25 years. Started in the Bay Area, and then we moved down to Fresno. And when we moved down to Fresno, one of the board members here at Hume Lake was a member of our church in Fresno. And so our youth leaders brought kids to camp, and Glenn and I immediately became one of the youth leaders there. So we got acquainted with Hume back in 1974, probably, by bringing junior high kids here to camp in Meadow Ranch. Back when there was no ARC, you know, we skated outdoors where the swimming pool is because there was no pool. And it was just sprinkled with a hose every night and hoped it was cold enough to be frozen and last through to the next night, and back in those days. And so came by as youth leaders, And then we came and attended several adult retreats and just grew to really be fond of Hume Lake. And one day we were camping over in the public campground with Glenda's sister and her family. And a lark said, hey, let's go look at the cabins over at Hume Lake. And so we wandered over here, went in to see Walt Warkentin, who was the director at that time, and got a list of several cabins that might be for sale. And they said, oh, yeah, and there's this one other one. And he told us about it. Anyway, we ended up buying that one other one and at Hume Lake here. And so having bought and becoming a leaseholder, we found our vacationing time being up here. And then we started volunteering. And then volunteering led to coming on summer staff. And then summer staff led to coming on full-time staff. So leaseholders, beware. You could be sitting here someday. So that was the journey.
Cool. How many leaseholders are in the room? I thought there were quite a few. So keep your hands up because I'm just making a mental picture of who's going to be up here as part of the development team in the not-too-distant future. I've got it down now. Mike, you came, bought a cabin, started volunteering. What was the first thing you did as a volunteer?
Anybody remember the name Frank Vincent? Remember that name? It was an old timer here, Frank. I was on staff for a lot of years and worked with Frank, falling trees and cleaning up trees, bucking trees, those kinds of things.
We were trees then.
Yeah. Not at this level.
You mean for the next 28 years I'm going to be talking about trees? Oh, good. Good. So volunteering, and you moved then. Okay, so come up summers, volunteered. Then what God use in your heart and life to move from being that volunteer cabin owner to coming on to staff at Hume Lake? I hear this story pretty often, but I know yours is unique. And how did you make that decision? How did he prompt your heart to say, you know what, I'm going to jump in?
Was not unhappy with my job with AT&T. It was a good job, and we liked living in Fresno. We liked that too. But Fresno is hot in the summers. And so the idea of coming up to Hume was an idea that kind of captured us, so we kind of thought about doing that. Prior to that time, you know, we had got acquainted with Bob and Pam Phillips. Bobby was the director at that time. No, actually, he wasn't. Kenny was the director when we bought the cabin. No, Walt was the director when we bought the cabin. Then Kenny, and then Bobby became the director.
How old are came. You? Sorry.
I'm old. What was the question? where do I leave off?
What made the difference to go from volunteer to...
So, volunteering, Melba Poor drafted me into helping out with the country fair. And she said, Mike, I need somebody to do cleanup. And nobody wants to do cleanup. After the fair's over, everybody wants to go back and rest. And so I said, okay, I'll take that on. And any help? She said, well, there'll be a couple people I can give you help. So really, there wasn't a lot of people in those days to help do the cleanup. If it didn't get done by the booth people themselves, you know, it fell to me and maybe a couple other guys at that time. And I remember working late into the evening after one of the country fairs, and I was just picking up the litter on the Meadow Ranch lawn because it always gets littered after the country fair time. And I was just out there, it was turning dusk, and by myself, I thought. But I looked down the other end of the lawn, and there was somebody else picking up litter also. And we worked our way towards each other, and turned out to be Bob Phillips. And I was so impressed with that. One of his great gifts was the idea of servant leadership, and he was good at it. And here he was, the fair is over, he's the executive director, and he's out there picking up litter as well. Nobody there to see that, nobody there to say, oh, wow, look at Bobby. And just on his own was doing that. And so I became really attached to him, kind of thought of him as a mentor. And so the desire to kind of work for him grew on me, and one time I said something to him about it. He says, well, one of these days, Drake, you're going to work for me. And I said, hey, one of these days, Bobby, I want to work for you. And so we had started doing summers up here, and I was working 3 days a week here for Hume and then taking a vacation day to do that third day and then go back down to do 4 days with AT&T or Pac Bell or Pacific Telsis or whatever our name was at the time. And had an opportunity to, you know, not with some big golden handshake, but they were encouraging people to get out of the business at the time, downsizing as they were reorganizing. And as a lark, we just said, well, what if we did that? So Glenn and I prayed about that, called Bobby and said, hey, you know, maybe now's the time. He said, let me look into it. And so he did, and eventually we connected again on that, and he had a job for me, and I started out in the maintenance department.
Doing what?
I was a shop coordinator, so reorganizing the shop and just doing behind-the-scenes stuff, which suited me fine.
Okay. Can you tell me why my cell phone won't work here at UM Lake? You're an AT&T guy, right?
You've got a Verizon.
I do have Verizon. You're right. That explains it. So maintenance supervisor, this is what year?
1994. We came on full-time staff.
Okay. So from 1994, when you came on full-time, you've worked for, let's see, Bob Phillips, Jeff Lilly, Mike Anthony, Bob, who came again as an interim in there, right? And then Dathan Brown. Give us a little bit of insight into their personalities and their leadership styles. How have you noticed the change in the different personalities, and how has that influenced camp and where we're at today?
Yeah, I don't know how the ultimate answer there and how it influenced camp, but let me give some observations. You know, Bobby was more of a tops-down guy, kind of did a lot of the thinking himself, and then said, here's where we're going to go, guys. A great thinker in terms of strategic planning and such. He's the one that is responsible for doing the real master planning of Hume, going way back with the Fleetmeyer and Lee team that allowed us to build out the camp at the level we've built it out here over the last 20-plus years. And so that Bobby's great gift was doing that. And so when you work for Bobby, you know, what you would end up with is all of a sudden he'd be sitting next to you at your desk and says, here's my job for you for the day, you know, kind of a thing, as opposed to having it all mapped out well in advance. So I remember that as the maintenance manager, him saying, hey, I need three guys and a bulldozer, and we're going to go do this. So that was Bobby Phillips.
Yeah.
Oh, he was on the dozer. Yeah, he was the dozer driver. And he's good. He's the best one we've ever had. He's really good at it. Jeff was more the creative guy, you know. So, you know, the two of them together put their heads together, and they're the ones that came up with Wildwood, which was a new camp, you know, the whole idea of Wildwood Camp. And they came up with the Joshua Wilderness Institute as a new idea as a camp. And then Jeff, you know, is the one that kind of really expanded, I think, with most of our off-site stuff. We started doing some off-site. One of our current board members, Tom Cornford, was our first off-site program manager. But it really developed more under Jeff, where we started doing some serious off-site, going lots of places to try to reach into military kids, reach into missionary kids, and give them a Hume experience, even though we're on their turf, they're not here. And so Jeff was creative in thinking through lots of fun ideas like that. More of a collaborative type of leader as opposed to a tops-down kind of a leader was Jeff. Mike Anthony was a professor. And that kind of carried over into our world here too. So he just had lots of notes and lots of ideas and things like that. His term here was so short, though. He was only here a couple years, so there wasn't a lot of opportunity to really see where Mike might have taken it before there was agreement to move on. So I'm not sure, you know, how that would have been different. I enjoyed working with Mike. He was good to me. And Bobby was in between Jeff and Mike. And then Dathan. Dathan's been a friend for a lot of years. You guys have heard the story before that he and I did security together back in 1991, 92, that time frame. And we kind of co-led the security department. That's when I was still doing 3 days a week up here and 4 days a week down in Fresno with the phone company. And so the days that I was gone, he was in charge. And the days I was here, I was in charge. And so we became fast friends and remained fast friends for lots and lots of years. Every time he'd be on the Hill, we'd make sure we connect and spend time together. And so working for him is just like working for a buddy, you know, because that's how we started. Mm-hmm. It was in those days. And you know, he's got the pastoral heart, you know, that probably the other guys didn't have as much. And that shows up with him. And the executive side of that, I think, is just something that's just really started to grow on him. He was doing executive kind of work in the church where he was at EB Fullerton. but I think he's really growing in that area here now.
Thanks. I've got other questions, but I think I agreed that I would answer one question that you would ask me if I was going to put you on the spot. I was only going to give you one, though, so I'll let you ask me one. That's true. I can have him turn him off.
Hey, I thought it'd be fun. Some of you know, some of you heard bits and parts of it, but you know, I thought, hey, John, just give him that, even if it's the Reader's Digest version, tell us where you've been. You know, what are those positions you've held that led you to now be a part of this ministry?
Sure. When we graduated, I think I've shared enough of the story of what we moved to California as newlyweds right after graduating from college, partly to play in some of those basketball leagues that we played in. But part of it was just to, when Lynn and I got married, we wanted to just, when you grow up in the East Coast, I grew up in Pennsylvania, Lynn in the Midwest in Iowa, you always have this like fantasy about California. It's like the land of fruits and nuts. No, it's not the land. It was the milk and honey flowing with beaches. That's what it was. And I remember as a kid, I never wanted to come to California because as a kid, I couldn't swim. And California was going to have an earthquake and we'd end up in the ocean. So in my mind, it made logical sense that that's not a place we would ever go. But as God would have it, we decided, and once we got married, you know, I wanted to go to seminary, but man, wouldn't it be fun as newlyweds? We were both 22 years old, fresh out of college, both teaching majors. What if we moved to California and taught school for a year, just for the fun of it? And a friend of mine who was a leader of a missions team was now the youth pastor at a church in Simi Valley, and they had a Christian school that was K through 8. And we came out for summer interns one summer and at that church and fell in love with the people, and we just thought this would be the coolest thing. Here we are, 22, footloose, fancy free. I had no school debt because I was an athlete. She had a little bit of debt, not much. Her dad had taken care of most of her college education. So we came out to teach for a year. And we were just going to come out to the fun, the sun, the beaches of California. And we arrived in California, married May 26th of 1984. And started June 1st, we moved to California to start this grand new adventure. And in that, the middle of that grand new adventure, my wife had a serious illness. And 7 months into our marriage, she had an experimental surgery at UCLA, a doctor. And I really look at God's hand because no one else in the world had ever done what he successfully did. My wife suffered from ulcerative colitis, and he was the first inventor of what today's known as the J-pouch. I won't go into a lot of detail on that because that's not the Reader's Digest version of the story. But God used that to keep us in California for a number of years, so over the next 13 years in California. The school had closed the 7th, 8th grade program for a time and kept the elementary school because it was there was numbers there. And after a year or so, we were here 2 years, this church came to me and said, you know, John, we want to start a 7 to 12 program, and we'd like you to be the first principal, and found great what's today Grace Brethren High School in Simi Valley. So I started Grace Brethren High School in 1986. And the Lord used that time. I said, I'll be glad to do it if you'll let me go to seminary at the same time. So while principal of a growing high school, I went to the master's seminary and finished my master's of divinity there in 1993. Yeah, I finished my MDiv and then continued on the school. The school had grown from a group of 33 crazy 7th and 8th graders in the basement of the Grace Brethren Church in Simi Valley. Then we had leased a public school campus, and by 1994-95, the school had grown to about 600 students. And then they asked me to be an overseer. By that time, I was overseeing the preschool through 12th grade program, about 1,200 to 1,500 kids. And in 1995, Lynn and I had been married at that point in time about 11 years, right? 84, 95, 11. Yep, 11 years. And just, we had, you know, God had just closed the door for us to have a family. And through his amazing volumes of information, he brought two kids into our life through adoption. That's just a whole other story that I'll share some other time. But so we adopted our two kids, and right after we adopted Jesse, my youngest, Lynn's dad farmer in Iowa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. And so we just made a decision that Lynn needed to be close to her parents, to her mom, to help her through those days and that time. And so we moved back to Iowa, where we started a prepaid phone card business. If you remember the 1990s, there weren't cell phones. It was the pay phones, and there were prepaid phone cards that you could buy at convenience stores. So my brother-in-laws and I, we started this prepaid phone card business, and over the course of the 2 years that we were there, we serviced some 700 convenience stores in Iowa, Illinois, Missouri. So those of you that are from those places, that's why I know where these little cities in Iowa are. I've been to every gas station in the state of Iowa. So I know where they're at, and there's towns without stoplights, but they have a gas station that sold phone cards. And so we did that for a couple years, and I got a call from the coach that I played for back at Grace. Said, John, new president, Ron Manahan's the new president, who was Lynn and I's Old Testament prof when we were college students, is now the new president at Grace. And he wants to launch a $30 million capital campaign, and he needs somebody to come as the vice president for development and raise money. Grace had never done that. Would I be willing to step into that role? But through some acts that God brought a part of our life, we decided to say yes to that. And I worked at Grace, which is our alma mater, from 1990, this is now 98, 99, till about 2013. The Lord blessed, and we built thousands, millions of dollars worth of buildings, raised about $80 million over the course of that 15 years, just to see God's hand work in the lives of people that were passionate about that place, to give back to it. And then when that time was done, our kids were a junior and senior in high school, and raised in the Midwest. The Midwest is a unique place to raise your kids. It's not very culturally diverse, if I can say it politically correct. And I wanted our kids that I know someday, Lord willing, they'll start to date so I can have grandkids. And they'll raise my grandkids someday in a world that's really different than that. So we decided to move to Houston, Texas, and work in a community and for a school. I took a job at a college there as their vice president for advancement that served inner city minority African American pastors. So that they could get their theological training so they could be better pastors in the African-American community. And did that for several years. But I wanted my kids, we moved to the most diverse county in America. Fort Bend County, Texas, is the most diverse county in America today. It's growing by about 100,000 people a year, the county is. And it's an amazing place. And we fell in love with our time in Texas, and my kids. You're not exactly parent of the year when you move your senior and high school daughter to Texas, but it was fun to see God work in their lives and just expose them to a different world than what they were going to see in Indiana. And so we did that for about 5 years, and then about a year ago I got a call from a headhunter whose kids went to, of all places, Grace Brethren School in Simi Valley, California, said, hey, I know of a place out here. Would you think about moving back to Hume Lake Christian Camps looking for a new vice president for a chief development officer? And after much prayer and visiting and sitting down with Mike and Josie and saying, tell me about Hume Lake Christian Camps and the development world, decided, yep, we're in. Kids are both in school, both out of the house, and we're just Lynn and I, so here we are. That was more than the Reader's Digest version, but I have a live mic. Let's talk a little bit about summer staff. You've been here since 94, full-time? That's a lot of summers. I noticed at Hume Lake, we count how long you've been at Hume Lake by summers. So I've been here one summer. Mike's been here more than one. Kids have changed. College students have changed over the course of that time. What's been the biggest thing you've noticed in those 1994, 1995 summer staffers to what they are in 2017?
Yeah, actually our first summers were 89. You know, that's when we were doing the part-time. 94 is when the full-time.
So from 1989 summers.
When Joel Weldon was rocking it on the stage with the Ponderosa kids. Boy, did you ever.
Well, I heard it was like down to here, blonde, and I've heard some stories today.
He was a rock star. It was really fun. You know, here's my observation with our summer staff kids. I've come to realize, through the years, and again, we've been here every summer since 1989, that how our summers go is so dependent on the quality of the kids that have come up to be our summer staff kids. Now, we're always getting quality kids every year, so I don't mean to say there's a bad lot and there's a good lot. But when they're not all on the same page with us and maybe are coming for maybe the wrong reasons, it shows up, in how the summers go for us. God's always at work. Kids are always getting saved. Lots of lives are being touched. But there's just can always be other kinds of little issues. And the summer staff kids, you would think, like full-time staff, we're the ones that are doing all the heavy lifting, and we're going to be the ones that are carrying it. But really, in the summer season, it's so dependent on the kids that come up, the collegians that come up and join us in the work we're doing. And if it's a good crowd, it's a good summer. And if it's a less than good crowd, then it can sometimes be a less than good summer or not as much of a summer as we'd want to have. You know, they always come then and now with great enthusiasm. A lot of them have been campers here, and so they just can't wait to come back to do that same experience and then all of a sudden realize, oops, it's not camp, is it? It's work, and it's 6 days a week, and sometimes I don't see the sunshine because I'm washing dishes in Ponderosa, and I don't see it unless I go out for lunch, and it's a different experience for them. But they come with great enthusiasm, for sure. Yeah. We can, I won't go into that story.
Okay. So then tell us a story of some summer staffer that you remember that had some impact or influence on you.
Well, it'd be easy to say Dathan Brown, because early on, he was that person. And just a quality young man. You could tell right then that God's going to use this young man in other things. He just was so much more mature than the other collegiate kids at that age on staff, and so he certainly did. But he just had a good way because it was kind of a mix-up in terms of who was going to run security the summer that we both did it, started doing it together. One part of the department hired him, another one hired me, and we both got here, and we both had the same job. And he was really gracious and just said, Mike, what I was told later, he didn't have to say it to my face, but he was, I'm going to default to Mike just because he's wiser and older, and I fooled him.
Better looking.
Well, I'm not sure about that part. But anyway, he defaulted me to kind of be the lead on the thing, but it was totally, we both did it together, shared responsibility, and just how he handled that, the maturity of how he handled that was unbelievable. Another young man that very impressive, who's on our staff still today now back as a full-time person, John Nelson, who is our utilities manager, watching John come for many different summers here and just stepping up in the ranks in terms of responsibility during the summer season for different things we asked him to do. He was mostly working in the program world and often having to do with lifeguards and the pools and that sort of thing. But now to see him raise his family here, and they're just quality young kids, and to see him step into leadership roles and assume the responsibilities he had, just really fun to watch him grow too. And I can say that about lots of kids who we started with us in the summer season and ended up being here as a part of full-time staff.
Great. I know we must be getting close to snack time because my stomach's starting to rumble a bit. But you're finishing your time at UMe. In the area of moving from full-time to part-time, in the area of development. Tell me a little bit about how did you get moved from all the things you've done at UMe, from security all the way through to moving into the development world, and what are some of the things you're most excited about the future of where you see UMe Lake going?
So development's new to UMe Lake, really. We started with Kevin Cookingham, who's now on our board. He was a program director here and was asked to kind of start up a development department. And that was back, I think, around year 2000. And Jeff was just becoming the executive director at that time. And I was his assistant. I was assistant to the executive director. That was my role at that year. And we were going to go out on the very first set of dinners. I wasn't included in that at the time. And Jeff's mom went in the hospital and ultimately died. And so he, for several weeks, needed to be here where she was. So he didn't go out that first year. Bobby carried it, and he sent me in his place. And so starting in the year 2000, I've had the privilege, didn't matter whether I was you know, the assistant to the executive director, or the director of operations, or the camp director, whatever it was, I got to be a part of the development team and started attending all the dinners, and actually had a number of people assigned to me to just follow up on and nurture and do those kinds of things. So getting to do development all through the years, even though my job description didn't include that, it was all these other things. And then when we lost our last director, that was John Lockhorst, we didn't have anybody to replace him. Josie was basically by herself. I was doing another job at that time, and I went to the camp director and said, you know, I am happy to. In fact, I think I really ought to do it, but obviously I need your guys' blessing. I ought to step in there and take care of this until you guys decide what you can do at the department. And he checked with Bobby, and Bobby said, yeah, have Mike do that. So by default, I became kind of the leader of the development department, and when Mike Anthony came, he just made it official. And in terms of observations and where we're going, one of the fun things in development that I've so appreciated, and you guys have come to know and love him too, is David Harrison. We got David back when Mike Anthony was executive director, and what a difference that's made in our development world. A man who comes with just great wisdom in this world of fundraising, has experienced his whole, well, no, he had a ministry experience as well, but been in the fundraising world for a lot of years. So when he came, that really elevated the department, which was Josie and myself at the time. At one time, there was actually 7 people doing it, and then it ended up being just Josie until I stepped in to be a part of that with her, and then with David, so it's just the 3 of us. So one of the things I'm excited about, John, is you're here and I'm not, you know. and it's growing, and it's going to get to grow, you know, that we're going to have more people to be a part of this. You know, in the fundraising world, we've come to recognize, and it's understood out there, it's about relationships. And so getting acquainted with you guys and building relationships with you guys and just hopefully nurturing those relationships and just connecting you to this ministry and giving you a love for this ministry even beyond what you already started with, you know, that's a great joy of getting to be in the development world. And so the fact that we're going to have more bodies to help us do that, that excites me for the future.
Cool. I promised you guys a chance to ask some questions, but I'm going to limit it. If you're a leaseholder, you can't ask a question because you know Mike, and Mike's been dealing with leases, so I want to give some folks that might not be leaseholders a chance to ask Mike a question, and right there it is. So stand up and talk pretty loud because Mike's old. One of the things I promised Mike is this isn't his obituary. He's not dying. So we've had one thanks for who you are, and that's great, but I really want to give you a chance to ask questions because that's really what I believe is what happens is in the locker room arena. So are there questions for Mike or myself about you, Mike, where we're at? You're not a leaseholder, are you? Okay, then you can ask.
Okay, part-time status as of March the 1st. John came in January, and we did dinners together, and then I was allowed to step down to less hours. My job right now is grandpa. So.
What about the dessert girl?
She's still dessert.
Okay. Oh, man.
To answer your question, Richard, I work for John. Along with Josie and David and Aubrey, who you guys maybe had a chance to meet too. And John is going to use me in a number of different ways. Obviously, I think most of which is to connect with people like yourselves. and to be a part of what we're doing here in the summer season, because, you know, the way we connect you, we can call you on the phone, we can send you something, or we can go knock on your door and have a cup of coffee with you. In the summer season, so many of you come here. So it's great to be on site, for us to be on site, because you guys come to us and we just get to interact with you there. So certainly see myself, and I think John sees it this way too, as spending summers here just engaging with donors and just continue those relationships and then expand that, you know, where he sees the greatest need.
We do have time before snacks for a couple others. Yes, ma'am.
I know you guys are changing some of, like, the retreats that you guys are doing. Like, you guys got rid of the mother-daughter retreat. Can you, like, explain why and what's going to take the place of that?
Yeah, Mike will answer that. I do. I can answer that, actually. One of the things that program is always trying to balance is what are the best, most effective retreats that we can have. And one of the things that with mother-daughter is numbers were shrinking in some of that. And so it'll move to just more of a women's retreat with across generations. So it's not called mother-daughter, but it'll be a very similar kind of a retreat that'll take its place.
So it didn't go away. I mean, there's still right. Two women retreats in the spring season and two in the fall season.
I'll take one more question, and then I have a couple of final comments. Okay, I'll open up the one leaseholder can answer one question, too. Sorry, Doug, I'm not calling on you. Wait, no, it's got to be a question, and it's got to be to Mike or I. That was my rules. This is the locker room. Sorry. Nope. Thanks. Okay. Kirk?
I'm just curious, you're a leaseholder here. Now, will you continue to live here, or will you move someplace else, or what are your plans for the future as far as location?
Right. So it was, you know, 2+ years ago that I sat down with Dathan and said, you know, I'm ready to be done, so maybe you need to be thinking about finding the next guy or gal. And so anticipating that was going to happen quicker than it did, Glenn and I ended up moving back down to Fresno. And so during the season that we did that here a couple years ago until John came in January, you know, I was just working up here but living down there and just commute up and spend the time up here doing that. And I continue to do that. So our home is actually in Fresno. We do have a little Hume cabin here, but it's pretty small. And so it's, you know, I tease that you have to go outside to change your clothes. It's just not a lot of room there, you know. So it's been tough getting used to that size of little home again. So we're in Fresno, and I'll come up as often as John wants me on the hill. But I can work out of the Fresno office, too. So we have an office, an accounting office there. And so I'll spend time there and on the road. And we'll spend summers here and utilize the cabin in that way. But Fresno is our home, which gives us a chance to reconnect with family because my son lives there. And so we've enjoyed that experience well. It was a great run being on site here for a couple decades. But it's been fun to be away as well.
I started our time telling you it's rare that you get to come alongside and take the person's place and him still be here. And I will just say this. It's not Mike's obituary because he's not dead. But there is no person I know that could have handled that as graciously and as kindly as Mike and Glenda Drake have done that. In 11 months, not once have I ever felt like when I was thinking about changing something or tweaking something, did Mike ever say, well, you know, we've always done it this way and you can't do it. And as a new guy coming in, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I value his opinions, and I always try to say, Mike, give me history. make sure I don't, you know, step on someone's toes by not letting them ask a question in the middle of a meeting when it wasn't really a question. Make sure I don't do that. But as we make changes, as we think about even next year's dinners, and I shared the other day of how do we continue to draw a younger generation of friends and ministry partners into this place, and at the same time not offend ministry partners that have faithfully supported this ministry for so long. So as we begin to think about next year's dinners, and this is kind of a peek inside the door of what we're thinking, I want to take the Hume experience with us on the road and draw in both generations together to see here's what God's doing in this place and here's where God's taking us to this place. All that to say is, as we begin to have, and I have some pretty harebrained ideas at times, to have Mike there to just remember, don't forget this group, or don't remember we tried that. You don't want to do that again. Or, hey, this worked. But really, I am so thankful that God has kept Mike here to introduce me to all the people in the dinners and the tours in the summers. And even this weekend, you know, I can say, Mike, what's their name? I've met him three times and I can't remember. And he always has the name, and he always graciously tells me who it is, or what they do for a living, or where your city you're from, or all those kind of things. So, Mike, thank you from me and Lynn and Glenda, dessert girl. Yes, I got a new nickname for Glenda. You guys have been incredibly gracious to us, and so I just want to say publicly thank you for what you've done for me and Lynn as we've moved onto the hill. It's almost snack time. But I want to give you a few instructions. We have movie night this evening. It'll start here about 8:30 after snacks. It's The Case for Christ. Will be the movie. David will be hosting that. David is here, isn't he? Oh, there you are. I can't see that far in the back, David. And so we have some snacks in the back, and I think there's snacks in Ponderosa Dining Hall as well. So if you want to go down there and have a snack and come back and have a snack for the movie, we just love snacks. I hope today's been fun. I hope you enjoyed this time just with Mike and just to get to hear his perspective on where we're at and things like that. Tomorrow morning will be our last time together, and we're going to open the Word. We're going to take a look at Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead tomorrow morning. So I invite you back. Joel will be here one final time with us tomorrow. And so I look forward to tomorrow. Let's jump into the Word together and ask God to do a great work. Can I pray for us tonight? Will you stand and get some blood back to your feet? Lord, it's a privilege again to come before you and say thanks for who you are, what you've done in this place. Lord, thanks for the years that Mike has invested here with Glenda, his dessert girl. That's so cool. Lord, thanks for that. And Lord, I thank you that he's not dead and he's staying around. That means so much to me as the new chief development officer to have that history and that wisdom that Mike brings. So, Lord, thanks for that. And we just thank you for our time. May our fellowship continue to be sweet in your sight. In Christ's name, amen. Have a great snack. And then back, the movie will start 8:30-ish.